So now that we've gotten through that in Psalm 7 here, you know, how God's looking at this, what God's going to be doing, what the pursuer or the persecutor is doing, being ripe and pregnant with mischief, having bound himself to iniquity. Now let's look at this whole idea of David's claiming to have some type of righteousness that God should honor, some type of iniquity, or some type of equity, I should say, or integrity. All right? So he says in 7:3, if I have done this, all right? If I have done this. Think of David's life and all the mistakes he's made and all the sins he's made. Some of them, I mean, terrible things, like sending Bathsheba's husband out to be murdered just because he wouldn't sleep with his wife so David could hide his adulterous affair with Bathsheba. I mean, what a terrible thing. And we'd have every right to criticize David for this if that's all there was to David. If David had never repented, if he didn't receive the Lord's rebuke and his chastisement and his correction, and wasn't sensitive to the buffeting and everything, if David didn't know his position with the Lord, think of God's position here. Okay? This is just one stepping stone towards Messiah here. And with any of these patriarchs or any of these prophets, I mean, these are faulty men. God doesn't have a lot if God couldn't use faulty men, who would he use? There wouldn't be anyone left for him to use because we're all faulty, you know. And you could say, well, at least I'm better than David. I've never had an adulterous affair, and I've never had the husband of the lady I had adultery with murdered. You know, I'm not that bad. We can judge each other on a relative person-to-person scale, but how does God see this? How does God, I mean, God anointed him initially. David makes as a kid, before David hardly has any fault to him. He's just a young kid out in the tending the flocks, right? That's when he was anointed. So God's not set back. He's not deterred by, doesn't have to take a detour because of David's indiscretions or our indiscretions. God's going to do what he's going to do. God's sovereign. God's not set back. God's not having to, you know, plan B on any of this. He sticks by his man, and his man has faults, but the man carries out what God needs him to when it all comes down to it, right? But he says, if I have done this, okay? Well, now what's he referring to? Is he talking about his entire life, everything that he's done, his entire time as being God's anointed? If I've done anything, is that what he's saying? No, he's saying, if I've done this, what the Shimei, the Benjamite, is accusing him of, right? Being a bloody man and his own mischief returning upon his head, right? This, you know, on David's head. If I've done this, in this regard, David's not free and clear on all regards. He's free and clear on this because he didn't take Saul's life the way the Shemite is recalling it, recollecting it. In fact, in 1 Samuel 24:11, David approaches Saul and tells Saul to his face, "Moreover, my father," see, he was a father-in-law. And Saul was David's father-in-law. "Moreover, my father, see, yea, the skirt of thy robe is in my hand." David had an opportunity a couple times to take Saul's life. Saul wasn't prepared. David snuck up or found David in a vulnerable or found Saul in a vulnerable position. He could have taken Saul's life, as the Benjamite accused him of, but he didn't. Instead, he cut a piece of his robe off and he shows Saul the robe. Said, "I could have done this. I could have done more than this, Saul. So, just, you know, shut up a minute here and let me tell you, that's not my intention," he says. He says, "For in that I've cut off the skirt of thy robe and killed thee not. Now thou," Know thou, and see that there is neither evil nor transgression in mine hand, and I have not sinned against thee. Yet thou, Saul, huntest my soul to take it. There's the facts of the matter there. The Benjamite apparently isn't aware of this or has disregarded this information because Saul could have been taken several times and was not by David. David left it to God's hands. Even though Saul went after David, David did not go after Saul. Saul was a very odd, mixed up, some would say mad or insane person. All right? This is who the Benjamite is standing up for here 30, 40 years later. 1 Samuel 22:8. Saul is recorded as saying, this is when he finds out Jonathan and David are in cahoots and none of his advisors, none of his counsels, none of his servants or anything have brought this to Saul's attention. Saul had to find out for himself. And it's not as bad as Saul suspects. Saul has this conspiracy mentality. He doesn't know who to trust. He can't even trust himself, you know. It's driving him mad, okay? So Saul says that all of you have conspired against me, and there is none that showeth me that my son hath made league with the son of Jesse, and there is none of you that is sorry for me or showeth, oh, boo-hoo, Saul, get over it, and showeth me unto me that my son hath stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait, as is this day. There's the facts of the matter, Shimei, tribe of Benjamin. There's the facts of the matter there. So if David had done this, if David had killed Saul, taken the opportunities, multiple opportunities, any one of those, and done this, well, then there would be an equity. There would be a moral evil or an injustice in David's hands. He left it to the Lord, and that way there is an equity, or there is a righteousness, or there is an uprightness about the way David handled this matter in this regard. Okay? What about in regard to Absalom? Okay? 2 Samuel 18:5. And the king commanded Joab, that's David commanding his military man, General Joab, and Abishai and Ittai, saying, deal gently for my sake with the young man. David's confident. They're just ready to go into this battle with the 20,000 of Absalom. He's telling him to go gently for his sake with Absalom. Okay, he loves Absalom. Isn't it funny how sometimes you love the person that hates you the most? That's the way it was with David and Absalom. He loved most the son that hated him the most. Deal gently for my sake with the young man, even with Absalom. And all the people, all the 2,000, 3,000, however many there were at that point, and all the people heard when the king gave all of his captains, those are the three captains, Joab, Abishai, and Ittai, gave the captains charge concerning Absalom. So it's not just David that could claim this. Anybody that was there, including his military captains, could have said, David told us to deal gently with Absalom. All right? What happened in the end, Absalom's hanging up there in the trees, dead by the time he's found. Okay. 2 Samuel 18:31. David receives word from Cushai. And behold, Cushai came, and Cushai said, tidings, my lord the king, for the Lord hath avenged thee this day of all them that rose up against thee. That's the 20,000. That's the oracle. That's Absalom himself, right? Has avenged thee this day of all those that rose up against thee. And the king said unto Cushai, is the young man Absalom safe? Cushai answered, The enemies of my lord the king, and all that rise against thee to do thee hurt, be as the young man is. That doesn't mean they've all been dealt gently with. It means that Absalom's dead. Here's David's reaction. If there's any question to his love for his child, he said, and the king was much moved, and he went up to the chamber over the gate and wept, and he went in, and he said, oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would God I had died for thee. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son. So, in regards to Absalom and David's dealing with Absalom, was there inequity? Was there false dealing? Was there mischief? Was there anything that David did that could be accountable to him? Surely David did things wrong, and he said things wrong, and he might have, you know, this or that. But in the grand scale of things, when it comes right down to the heart of the matter, did David do wrong to Absalom? No, it was Absalom that did wrong to David. Absalom did what was right in his own eyes, but he did what was wrong to David. And furthermore, and more importantly, he did what was wrong to God's anointed vessel. For that period of time, God's stepping stone towards the Messiah, anointed before David could ever do anything right or wrong as a child. Absalom did wrong by doing what was right in his own eyes. David continues here in verse 4, if I have rewarded evil unto him that was at peace with me. Was Absalom at peace with David? No. Was David at peace with Absalom? Well, by all appearances, I'm sure it was unsettling. It wasn't a comfortable time for him, you know, for David, that is. But this is Absalom's pit that he dug, and this is Absalom's mischief returning upon his head. Was he at peace with Saul? No. Saul rewarded evil to David. Verse 4, he says, yea, I have also delivered him without cause that is my enemy. Verse 5 says, let the enemy pursue my soul and take it. Verse 5 says, yea, let him tread down my life upon the earth. Verse 5 says, lay my honor in the dust. If I've done wrong, if I've done this, that's the whole question. If I've done what I'm being accused of, it doesn't mean he's perfect in every regard, that he's sinless and that he hasn't had mistakes, and doesn't mean that he's not suffering the consequences of his mistakes right now. It means in these regards, in these things, if I've done wrong, well then, let the enemy pursue my soul and take it. Let them tread down my life on the earth. Let them lay my honor in the dust. Now we can look back on this several thousand years later, 3,000 years later, and say, David's honor was not laid in the dust. God did not judge David. So apparently there was whatever we can describe as David's righteousness or his equity or his uprightness, there was something that God, though God could have punished him for many things and did chastise him for several of these things and did buffet him, and it was never easy for David. It wouldn't have been easy for any one of us, and none of us would have done any better at it. All right? If I've done this, think about this. The king has so many things to do. There's so many things he's called upon to judge, and so many things he's called upon to decide and to plan for and to present and to negotiate and everything. So many things needing to be done. There's bound to be things that the king, and no matter how good of a king, there's going to be things that he's going to be criticized for. There's things that even God could rightly criticize him for. Right? But in the big picture, the grand scheme of things, there must be something to David and something to some of these other patriarchs and these other prophets and stuff that God is dealing with them in a merciful way. Justifying them, making them right to himself in a merciful way. David had done some things in his life that he, now later in his life, he's having to suffer the consequences. God didn't remove the consequences from him, and he's not going to remove the consequences from us. All the bridges that we burned, all the things that we've stolen, or all the, you know, if you're there in jail for murder, you're going to remain there in jail for murder. There are consequences. That's the instruction. But now we're sensitive to the instruction. Now we're sensitive to the rebuke and the chastisement and stuff. And God's using these experiences to make better people out of us. Not perfect people yet, but better people out of us. David's a better man, even in his older age, having suffered the things he's done and been in exile as many times as he had and been as victorious as he has. He's had all these different experiences that he's had to rely on God that much more. And even though David often lost his focus of where God was currently at, you know, he says arise, or he says awaken, or, you know, where are you, Lord? That kind of thing, right? It's not that God has gone anywhere. God's always there, and God's always right where he's always been. God doesn't change, you know? It's us that vacillates and oscillates and gets out of touch and out of connection and out of alliance with God. And we look at, you know, we fear our present situation, the threatenings of death and the threatenings of persecution and prosecution and all the different things we're beset with, right? And we fear those more than we fear God. You'll notice in every one of these psalms, David eventually, by the end of the psalm, comes back to his fear of the Lord, his reverence for the Lord, knowing that God is who God is and that God will always be who he is and always do right. God will never do wrong. God will never neglect. You know, God certainly will chastise. God certainly will instruct and reprove, but he's doing this now in a loving, fatherly, corrective way. So when we're considering our own integrity, our own, well, about as much as we can make out of it is whether we're sensitive or not to God's correction. We're all sinners. We're all making mistakes. We're all doing what is right in our own eyes. We're all suffering the consequences of it. But some of us, thankfully, thanks to the mercy and grace of God, through our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, we're more sensitive to it and we're more willing to accept or acknowledge or recognize the correction and live it forward into our lives.